Welcome to the pilot episode of this podcast, the Savage Geese Podcast. I'm Mark, and I started all of this. So let me just give you the layout of how this is going to work. The podcast will be probably several times a week, and I really oppose doing this because everybody has a podcast, but the other part of it was I didn't want to invest any more time or money into gear. I'm already maxed out with the video stuff. But with the advent of software like I'm using now, Anchor, which is an app on your phone, it does everything for you. And, you know, you're going to probably hear one ad a video that's supporting Anchor, because literally all I have to do is record my voice, invite other people on remotely. I don't even have to be in the same place. It merges all the audio for you, and all you have to do is upload. And it uploads to multiple places like Spotify and all that. So you're going to hear an ad for that. It's the only way I can make probably 20 cents on a podcast. And Patreon, you know, there's going to be, most of the topics are going to be decided by Patreon people because they're supporting me and they've been here from the start. It's one of the main reasons why all of this exists. So I just want to be transparent with that, of how that's going to work. The next part is I'm going to have guests on. Clearly, it's not a lot of fun me just talking to myself or talking to everyone that's listening. Yeah, I've already talked to the Straight Pipes. They want to come on. I'm going to have Scott, Todd, Jack, and a whole bunch of other people eventually, which I'm working on. So, you know, hopefully this is a good supplement to the videos where you can listen to it on a commute. You can kind of hear some ramblings and unformatted talk that you won't hear on the videos. And here's the part with the videos. Savage Geese, the channel, has become very structured. And originally it was more fun, and now I feel like some of it has to be, I've kind of found where I wanted to go with it. And I want to try to bring to the table other things that not a lot of people can do. I want to explain the technical side of things. I want to explain the people behind the products, or the people that have been in the industry explaining things. So people can see the cars or the products that I'm showing, and they understand how it all works, that it's not just a big chunk of metal, that there's a lot of thought behind a lot of this stuff, and that there's a ton of compromises that every single thing we use has to have, either for cost or just because the consumer market is so fickle and short-sighted. I mean, I want to cover all that. And from cars, it's going to move into tech products and all of that, because that's where my background was. So you're going to see this kind of morphing of automotive technology, automotive car videos, and you're going to start to see more technology-focused stuff as well. And that's right in my wheelhouse. I'm going to have a beta channel, which is more fun, and I need an outlet to have fun. I have an insane sense of humor, although you don't really see it because I have to dial it back. It's super polarizing, it's super sarcastic, and some people are very, very annoyed by it. So you're going to see some of that coming out in the podcast and on the beta channel that I'm launching, which is just Savage Geese Beta, which will be renamed to SG Beta. But all of these things together are going to give you a complete option to see different types of content. And hopefully, you know, in the podcast form, you know, you can listen to this stuff on a commute. You don't have to be tied to a video screen. And I can see the value in that. So let's talk about Savage Geese briefly. I was big into watching movies when I was a kid. My dad had me sitting in front of TV watching movies with him all the time. I think it was one of my first movies I remember seeing was in 1986. I think it was 8 years old. I don't know if this 6 to 8 years old. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I can't do math. Yeah. 8 years old was Aliens in 1986. I remember standing in line to get in the theater, and then he took me to like Last Temptation of Christ and all these movies that I probably shouldn't have been seeing as a kid. And it changed my perception of how I see things from a storytelling aspect. Now, granted, it's really hard to tell stories with cars, but I have a really good like visual idea of how I want to capture certain things. When I look at the outside world, I see it from like the eye of a camera. And, you know, as a kid, you know, my parents had camcorders. This was pre-internet, obviously, like these shitty VHS-C camcorders or 8mm. And I'd always be making some type of movie or skit, and I'd edit it on two VCRs, and they were horrible. But I was big into that whole process. And unfortunately, being in the Midwest, And again, without the internet, there was no real way to do it for real. And the only thing then was, like, Hollywood, and that was a joke. You know, like, that's like, oh, I want to be a movie star. And I was way too practical, even as a kid, for that. So I focused on my strong parts, which was, like, troubleshooting. I knew how to figure things out. I had a really strong comprehension of technology and all of that. But I really wanted to help people. Like, that was my main core belief. Even as, like, a young kid, I wanted to help people. I didn't want to do, like, some meaningless thing. So as a teenager, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to go into healthcare. But, my parents didn't have a lot of money. Well, they really didn't have any money, and I was on my own. And the concept of trying to go to school was not possible. I knew at that point I didn't want to take out $100,000, $200,000 worth of loans to go to medical school. And I had to survive. I had to pay for my own car, apartment. I was out on my own when I was like 18. It was very difficult to do. So I'm like, well, I'll go into nursing. And I got into it, worked in that field for like 4 years in healthcare, corporate healthcare. And I quickly realized that I wasn't helping anybody. Most of the people that came in, you know, you talk about fast food or products like, oh, my infotainment doesn't work, or my burger is gross, or the sauce is, you know, I didn't get enough sauce. That's not life ending. The people that would come into doctor's offices or hospitals, they weren't coming in because they wanted to. They were coming in because they were miserable or had problems. And that's the only thing you saw every day. And the worst part was insurance. And I saw how these doctors worked. All of them were out of school, most of them, or in their 30s, and they were saddled full of $100,000, $200,000 of debt. They had student loans and other loans for cars, mortgages. They had families. Their wives didn't work, or, you know, the women just had kids and they had to take time off. My point is, I saw what they had to do to make money, and most of them in, like, internal medicine and a lot of these doctors were on production, which meant in corporate healthcare, they had to see a certain amount of patients a day to get a bonus or to meet their numbers. And then you had the pharmaceutical side in it pushing, like, well, we'll use our drugs. And it was just a very eye-opening experience. And then adding the insurance side to it, you know, certain doctors would not want to see patients that had certain insurance because they didn't get paid out as much. And then, you know, me being responsible for a lot of the referral, the insurance for the managed care plans. The long story of that is I saw a face of it that I could not stomach, and that wasn't indicative of the entire industry, but in the 4 years I was there, it was a lot of get people in and out as quickly as possible, prescribe as many drugs to get them, you know, just get the complaints stopping, and medicine was more about not treating the people. It was just, you know, how do we stop the complaints? And it was kind of a sad place to be. And I probably should have stuck with it and, you know, furthered my education and gone into medical school. I think I probably would have been good at that. But at that time, I transitioned out of the healthcare. Well, I'm still in healthcare, and I went into the IT department because I had a really high technical aptitude. I got in IT that way in the hospital in my early 20s and went on from there to Motorola, which, you know, this is back when they were really Motorola. I think the Razor was out at that point, and the Q and all these other things were there in my time period. And then I got to learn about corporate culture, consumer products and all that. And this went on for years, like 15 years, went to another job, which I'm not going to name right now, but it was a lot of that. They supported multiple huge customers, like all the telcos, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, all of that. And it was all a service industry for all the big companies where we did work for them, and working with a lot of engineering. I did all the IT stuff, and, you know, for Jesus, I think we had over 60 branches by the time that we left, and it was just too much. It was too much. And there's other things behind it I'm not going to say, but I learned a lot from seeing that, and seeing how we're constantly pitched garbage, even on the corporate side. Like, you have a vendor coming in, like, hey, we can sell you this software, or we can sell you this tech solution, and everything's over $100,000, and then you get it, and you wind up, the support sucks, nothing works the way it's supposed to, and you see these companies, like the bigger companies, who have this huge support team. And it was just me and a couple other dudes trying to support all this stuff and make all of it work. And, you just realize how flawed everything is. It's what you're being sold is never what it is. To have technology that is integrated properly and works is very rare. And the support from the companies that are selling it, that's where I learned. Like, if a company doesn't support their product, and you can tell really quick how good their support is, then you don't want to have anything to do with them. And it's translated really well into the car industry. And I'll get into that more in a minute. But as it stands, I ran some web servers in my 20s that were running car forums. And then I kind of expanded that out later on. And server hosting kind of died. And all the forums died in favor of social media. It kind of took over. And I never really made a lot of money off of it, but it was a great experience on how to administrate communities, people, seeing different types of automotive people and making connections that way was kind of how it started. And with the career job, I kind of bailed out of the car stuff. I was always into cars, but I never really worked in the industry again until I got into my pretty much 30. I met Scott and he was going through some stuff. So we started karting together. We were doing driving events, karting like every week. It was nuts. And this went on for, I think, like 3 years. And at that time I'm like, dude, I got this FRS. It would be fun to make videos. I have all this camera equipment that I bought from video projects. And, I jumped into it. You know, YouTube was more a vlogger thing early on. It was really low quality. And when I jumped into it, you finally could upload an HD video. You can upload an HD video that you could do over 10 minutes. And that's where I found the value in it. And once I started doing these videos, I realized, well, this is like second nature to me, even though I had a lot of learning to do what an audience would be able to digest. It's, you know, I'm crazy. Like, literally, I have a crazy sense of humor. It's super offensive. And that's not going to attract a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, it's hard not being me, but at the same time, it's a good lesson on how to temper yourself and kind of pull the reins in to become like a stronger, better person, more professional. So that's kind of what the video stuff taught me. But it was very, very hard doing the video stuff and having a full-time job. And I didn't really take the video stuff seriously until I realized I was at a point where I'm like, look, I've spent at least 3 years doing this, and every step of the way has been a challenge. And it was not easy getting to the point where it's at right now. And I don't even, this is 2019, and I'm not even halfway where I want to be, making connections in the industry, becoming credible, having people even pay attention to you. Proving yourself, making the relationships, having the respect, and this is still something I'm building. And, you know, I don't think the talent's run out yet, but there's two different things. You have talent, and then you have the level of creativity and follow-through. And just being one guy, it's been really, really difficult, and this is the way I've always dealt with it. I'm really good at being a solo act, but there's some point where I will need help, and Jack has kind of stepped in right now in between his college life and he's going to be starting his career. He's really helped me on the business side and just taken the reins on, you know, when I'm working 60 hours a week editing or making a video, which now he understands how much work it is. I've had him get behind the camera and do all this stuff, and he's like, dude, this is like beyond a full-time job. And it really is. So, you know, that's only half of it. Making a video and putting it out there, the work doesn't stop there, because you got to get back on the computer, you got to email, you got to do the business side of it, you got to arrange the cars, you got to deal with the fleets and trying to get certain models, and that's really hard. Every company is different with press cars. It's, you know, they're very concerned about how quickly you release, the numbers game, all the other stuff, and of course your messaging. Certain companies do not want anything other than a glorified advertisement, which I'm going to get more into on certain podcasts. But it's been a very big eye-opening experience to go from like where I started to where I'm at now, just making videos and trying to make it work long term. So like, crowdfunding is a huge thing, and I said this, say this a lot, I think I've already said it, without the support of like Patreon and all this, it's, you know, YouTube goes away, or YouTube ad revenue goes away. This is a done deal. I'm back in the corporate world. So, you know, that's why it takes time to build all this stuff up. And right now, you know, somebody's like, well, how much money are you making? I'm like, well, on paper, it looks amazing. It looks great. I mean, it's not as much as my old job, but it looks good until you realize you look at the balance sheet and all the expenses I have, the overhead of having the shop, the camera equipment, the constant investment. Basically, every dollar I'm getting is going back into the video aspect right now, because that's what I need to do to continue building it out. And, you know, I won't know if that's sustainable for another couple of years. And that's very, very hard to live like that. And, you know, again, that's what I want to do. That's part of trying to run a business. And, you know, you meet more and more people, and it's great. So that's kind of the story of Savage Geese and where it is and where it's going. Hopefully, I'm able to continue to bring content that's valuable. And, you know, people are like, well, this Savage Geese guy is boring. I can't stand it. And, you know, you struggle with it. Some people say, look, you're either making entertainment content, you're making content that is for entertainment value, or you're making educational content. I hear this a lot. And blending those two together is very difficult. Entertainment value is very fickle. You can look at any industry. There's a finite window of popularity before you reach your peak and you crash in the entertainment industry. From the educational side, yes, I understand that a lot of these videos are not going to appeal to everybody because sometimes they're too much. But I would rather be the person that they say, you know what, I'm bored, but that guy knows what he's talking about. I respect what he's doing, but I'm kind of bored by it. It's not for me, than being like, this guy is an idiot. He's a douchebag. Like, I would rather be attacked for the fact that I'm providing too much content than being a friggin' sideshow. And for me, I've always said, I don't need to be the first. I don't care about having the most views, the most popular. That's not what this whole thing's about for me, and that's the way I approach every single video. Now, there's certain times where you have to play into certain stereotypes, and I like doing that. That's the only thing I can do, really, to have a little bit of fun with this. My ideal video would be just off the deep end, and people would be so offended by it that probably I would get a lot of people following it, but at the same time, I lose a lot of the professional credibility if I just went off the deep end. So it's very, very hard to balance this. So I think the last part of the video creation process is people ask all the time, you know, why don't you have this car? Why don't you have that car? And to me, again, it's not a race. I'm not racing to get all these cars and to get them out there. I want to do the best job I possibly can. And it's far more rewarding to take my time with something, make it look good, make it educational, than it is to bang out like two or three videos a week just to make the numbers, the analytics. So you're going to see that. You're not going to see me just busting out videos for the sake of it. And I think the last complaint is, you know, people have, you know, it's hard because they, you know, you don't know who I am watching these videos, but people seem to think I'm kind of like pretentious, or I'm, you know, like think I'm too good or whatever. And that's really not what it is. I just look at things very critically. And again, I'm the person that has this analytical troubleshooting mindset. I'm trying to figure everything out. So when I look at a product, I'm kind of like disseminating everything. And it's not because it's bad or whatever. It's just the way that my personality is. And I look at it and I think of everything as a way of an improvement. And that's how I focus on my own stuff. I like to hear negative feedback. I'll go on Reddit. I'll read every single comment on the YouTube channel. And I don't respond to all of them, but I read every single one. People are like, why don't you do this? Why is this guy this way? You know, and this is part of taking constructive criticism and making your work better. And that's the way I look at every single product. Now, of course, I could say, this sucks. Why did you do it this way? And you know what? That may not be that brand's ideal of what they're trying to do. But typically what I want to find out from them is why they do the things the way they do. And once you understand that story, it's way easier to explain to somebody in a video like, oh, well, we didn't put independent rear suspension on this car because consumers don't give a shit about it. They care about having leather inserts on the dash and acoustic laminated glass and Apple CarPlay. And, you know, that way you can explain that when you understand it and you disseminate it and you create a culture of questioning just a little bit, you learn more. And that's what I like. It's not about me being better. You know, I'm not making cars. None of us doing the reviews are making cars. We're not running a car business. And I respect a lot more all the work that goes into making these products and cars. It's very difficult to do. We're in the cheap seats. We're in the cheap seats kind of picking apart stuff. It's the easiest thing in the world. So I understand that. And I'm really trying to bring value to that, as well as trying to help these companies and people read between the lines. So, yeah, I'm not big on showing off. I don't care about flexing. You know, like people say all the time when I'm driving around in my Civic, dude, why are you driving around that piece of shit? What are you, a Mexican? You know, what do you not have insurance? You know, like all the stereotypes that I get. And at the end of the day, I don't really care what people think of me with the car stuff. I don't need a fancy car to be like taken seriously. I just want something that legitimately is paid off, that I don't owe any money on, that I don't have to be in the shop fixing it. And I want simple, and then I want a very focused car to have fun in. You know, the S2000 brings me great joy. It's not the best car, it's not fast, but it brings me joy, and it's paid off. The Atom is a focused car. Like, I can literally feel the purity of that car. There's no door handles, there's no power windows, there's no any power anything. I love it. I like that simplicity of it. And that's the way I am. I like the purposeful nature of design. And that's not the way things are, because most people just want everything. You know, they want everything. They want the hot dog with, you know, fully loaded with mayonnaise and, you know, puke, whatever. They want every single thing on everything. So it's part of learning what people want. I pay attention to the people that watch the videos very closely. I pay attention to what other people are doing very closely, and trying to always be creative and not just like fall asleep on a formula. So that's the story with the channel. I know that's a very, very long historical look at my mindset, but you know, some of these podcasts are going to be a lot more animated than this. Once we get some guests on, it'll be a lot more fun, but I felt like you should know some of this, and hopefully it's a good window into what I'm doing. All right. Thanks for listening to the pilot episode. Look forward to more on the Savage Geese Experience.